This is the official EFL podcast with Mark Clement.
Hello, everybody. It is the official EFL podcast with me, Mark Clement. And in a week when matters pre-match may have dominated the EFL headlines, there have been some notable achievements that involve kicking a ball around. In the Sky Bet Championship, from the depths of struggle just 10 days ago, Cardiff City made it four consecutive wins. In Sky Bet League One, Wigan Athletic picked up more points in one match than they had in their previous 10. And in Sky Bet League Two, Port Vale ended a run of five consecutive defeats by scoring six away from home. It's the official EFL podcast. We'll step into Christmas and talk wider issues in the Sky Bet Championship, League One and League Two, in the company of Chris Kamara, who has a new album out a little bit later on this week's official EFL podcast. But first, RB Leipzig weren't the only ones to bloody the nose of Manchester United in a cup competition this week. On the same evening, United's first team were being knocked out of the Champions League. Accrington Stanley were beating their under-21s in the Papa John's Trophy. John Coleman's team have also won five of an unbeaten last seven in the league. And there used to be a time when we did interviews, John, and you would play merry hell with me if I called you little old Accrington Stanley and how few resources you had and all that. And now I'm thinking you're going to start to knock me down and say, oh, don't get us overinflated. So have you gone from bullying the boys up to having to keep their feet on the ground?
No, not really. I mean, we still haven't got much resources. That's for sure, but we're just trying to do our best, and we've got a cracking set of lads. You know, we've got some lads on loan from, you know, from big clubs, from Chelsea, Newcastle, Watford, and they've took to it like a duck to water. You know, there's no airs and graces about them. You know, our training ground compared to their training grounds, night and day. And they've mucked in with all the lads. They've really enjoyed it, embraced it, and you know, I think that's been part of the reason why we're working so hard and doing okay.
Yeah, but that's a pat on the back to you and your assistant, Jimmy, as well, isn't it? That you've now got a notoriety. You had it with players that were, say, released from the Northwest Academies. They tended to form, you know, a goodly proportion of your talent pool. But if big clubs are now willing to lend you their prospects, it's a pat on the back for you guys. Is it about the way in which you will nurture them, handle them, the style in which they play?
I'd like to think so. You know, I mean, we're lucky, really. We've got a small, tight-knit staff, but a great group of lads. You know, obviously, we've got Jimmy, who's been there since I was born.
Wow, that's a very long time ago, John.
And we've got John Doolan, who is also a Kirby lad. You know, that his claim to fame is helping Ibs to win the Scottish Cup for the first time in 115 years, a couple of years ago. So we've got him. We've got Tony Warner as goalkeeper and coach.
Yeah.
We've got the most qualified kit man in the world, Naz Ali.
What is he again? Solicitor, is he? He's qualified.
Yeah, he's qualified solicitor, but he'd prefer to be our kit man. So it's only a small group, but they all work the socks off. And, you know, I think probably other clubs appreciate that we, although we haven't got many, we all do our best to try and enhance the experience the players have, and hopefully they leave us better people and better players.
So listen, you might have a couple more bodies in there, but you're painting a picture of a proper small community club. Perhaps two or three of you would have been in place when you got involved with the club way, way back 21 years ago, wouldn't you? So how do you maintain those kind of homely, neighbourly values with that attention to detail of the sort of people who want to be involved? All, you know, let's be honest, Naz could be off and earning a lot more money, probably doing his bit if he followed his true profession. How do you maintain that, but operate at a level where the teams all around you in the table are teams that are well-recognised, even more household names than Accrington, and have been in the Premier League fairly recently?
Well, I think, you know, a lot of it's down. You can't make it like a holiday camp, and then it's just like, oh, it's all singing and dancing, we're all just going to enjoy ourselves, because then you lose the value of what you're there for, and you're there for to work hard. And I think any success we've had, you know, we've been fortunate to have four promotions, all winning the league, ironically. And that's all being built on hard work. But I've always been a firm believer all my life that if you enjoy what you're doing, you're going to do it better, or you're going to try and do it better. And if you've got ownership of what you're doing, so, you know, it's not as if we bark orders and people say, you do this, you do that. We we sang, it's like a bit of a guided learning. I know I'm going to sound very teacherish here, but, you know, it's like they've got to discover for themselves certain aspects of what they do on the pitch, because we can't freeze the game. And they've got to make decisions for themselves. And a lot of the time, it's hard to get them to make better decisions. So we believe in working really hard. And one of the best compliments I had was from one of the crew staff who used to play with for me at Southport. And he said, I can't believe how fit you are. What's your sports science team like? And I said, well, you're looking at our sports science team, the other three of us. You know, and that was a big pat on the back, I thought, because how fit he thought we were. And we've been doing similar things, but we've always tried to over the years. We've always tried to improve our knowledge. We'll take, you know, we'll pinch things off other people if we think it'll fit us. And I'm sure other managers and teams will pinch things off us as well. But I think, you know, the minute that you think you've cracked it and you've completed the game of football, you're going to go flatten your face and you're going to go backwards. So we're always trying to learn, and we're always trying to get the players to learn as well. But, you know, we haven't got all the answers. We're trying to find them.
Do you have a set of fundamentals that have been with you throughout your management career that, yes, get adapted to the stage you're on, but they underpin your own values, beliefs, and how you like things to be done?
Yeah, of course. And the very first thing I said from day one, and I haven't veered from this, you know, since I walked into Aston United in 96, 97, I wanted to treat players the way I wanted to be treated as a player. And I've never, ever wavered from that. So, you know, I've never gone out my way to treat a player badly. You know, and I know that there is a thing in football, if players are acting the goat, that, you know, you treat them worse to try and force them out of the club. I've never done that. And I never will do that. You know, it's my responsibility to try and get the best out of every player I've got, whether they're in the team or they're not. And, you know, on the odd occasions we have had success, one of the big parts of my management has had to be looking after the players who weren't playing. And I've never been one for chopping and changing teams. So, you know, I think the year we won the League Two a couple of years ago, we played the same team 16 out of 17 games and didn't make a sub for 11 of them. So that meant a lot. You needed a lot of TLC with the lads who weren't playing just to keep them on board when you needed them. And all throughout my managerial career, I've always believed in treating players right. And sometimes that's been to my detriment, because I have had a couple who've acted the goat, but in the main, I've been fortunate to have a lot of players who, you know, a lot of players that still have a point with me now and call me Gaffer, who haven't played for me for 20 years, but I've been fortunate. I've had lots and lots of players who've gone through a brick wall for all of us.
How do you stretch yourself? Do you keep stretching yourself? You know, teacher by first profession that's become a professional footballer, have you still got quite a scholarly approach to your own education?
I'm always trying to improve. You know, I've gone through all the things I can. I think the LMA are talking about trying to get me on a master's, because, you know, I've done my pro license, I've done my diploma in football management. You feel as though then, yeah, there's nowhere else to go. So they were talking about trying to get a master's.
That would be great for you, wouldn't it?
It'd be fantastic. Yeah, you know, and I think I'd really enjoy it as well. But you're always trying to improve your own knowledge. And, you know, I definitely try and look at other people's work. The thing that's fascinating me at the moment, I've been having really good conversations. A lad used to play for me, Anthony Barry, and he did work at our academy for a little bit. Now he's doing wonders at Chelsea.
Yeah, it's a great story, that, isn't it?
Yeah, brilliant.
It's a fantastic story. He was at Wigan last season.
He was at our under-16s about 3 years ago.
Wow.
And he's done brilliant. He's so conscientious. His attention to detail is magnificent. And, you know, I speak to Anthony a couple of times a week. And over the last 2 years, we've had this shared fascination on throw-ins and how important they are. And I think Liverpool are probably the ones who first brought in a throw-in coach. And and just how important they are and how underestimated it is. So we're always bouncing things off each other on that, and it's still something that I still want to go deeper into, and that is something that has fascinated me for ages, how much it's underestimated or people don't pay enough attention to it, when, you know, you'd have to defend 20 and probably take 20 yourselves. Such an opportunity to retain possession that is sometimes overlooked. So that's something that I have been looking at, and it's great to see the journey he's going on at.
Do you use the fixture list, the teams you're playing? Do you use the league table? Do you use the stories of the Burton Albions and the Wickham Wanderers to inspire the boys?
Well, we had to use the Wickham Wanderers one. That was, you know, I like to give like a rousing speech at the start of each season, and that was definitely in the forefront. You know, what we tried to pin home to the lads this season was that we won the league quite comfortably 3 years ago. We won League Two when we were favourites to relegation at the start. And the three teams who went up with us were Coventry, Wickham and Luton Town. So them three are all in the Championship. Now, we won that league by, you know, 5 or 6 points. So we said, listen, you know, that should be an incentive to you that it can be done. So, you know, we're a million miles away at the moment, but we've given ourselves a chance to contest the top half rather than the bottom half. And, you know, the players should always aim high, I think. You know, if you set yourself a target to survive, eventually you won't survive.
Now, listen, you've painted a wonderful picture for us of the attention to detail you go into, the hard work on the training field, etc. But you also did allude a little bit earlier to the fun you like to have. You've always been keen to serenade the boys with a little bit of your Frank Sinatra impression, haven't you?
I do like to sing, but unfortunately...
You do like to sing? Well, on that note, John, can you just explain this for me, please?
Step into Christmas, let's join together. We can watch the snow fall forever and ever. Eat, drink and be merry, come along with me. Step into Christmas, the admission is free.
Ooh. Was it because you knew Chris Camaro was following you on the official EFL podcast? You felt you had to get an early shout in with one of the Christmas renditions? Is that what that was?
I went to do the normal press with the press officer Luke and Daney, or the press officers Luke and Daney, and they said, listen, we want to do a message to the fans because we're going to do individual personalised messages for the fans. So can you start it off with a line of a Christmas song? And I went, well, which Christmas song? And he went, well, pick your favourite. Well, I don't think my favourites would have gone down well because it must be Santa by Bob Dylan or Fairy Tale New York, and I don't think that was quite apt. So the first one that came into my head was that. Now, you wouldn't believe that. That was take four, that one. The first take...
John, I would, John.
No,
I would
no,
believe
wouldn't.
It.
You wouldn't, because the first take I absolutely nailed, and they didn't get it right, the record, and then I messed up the next two, and then... You see, my voice is carrying a bit at the moment. If you got me 10 years ago, I think I might have had a run for my money making my own song, but no, I think it's carried a little bit now.
Been a pleasure to talk to you. Don't give up the day job, though, John, will you?
Well, no, I'll tell you, 10 years ago, I might have been a singer, but not anymore. Now it's carried.
This is the official EFL podcast.
There was mass panic amongst family members of football fans in the last few days when Amazon were briefly showing Chris Kamara's latest Christmas album as unavailable until the 5th of January. Thankfully, the follow-up to last year's release, Here's to Christmas, which is entitled And a Happy New Year, has been restocked, and Cammy's version of I Wish It Could Be Christmas Every Day shall play throughout the land on the 25th of December. When, of course, Chris... You'll be opening not just Christmas presents, but birthday presents as well.
Oh, do not remind me of that. It's everyone else's day, so you've got to enjoy that. But I will be opening presents. I have to say, it was 3 years ago, I think it was, when I was late back from the pub. My wife was not very happy, and I didn't open any of my birthday presents that day. And I said to her, that's the worst Christmas I've had since I was a kid.
Well, I tell you what, we won't have to worry about you being late back from the pub this year, because none of the pubs are open for those of us that like a couple
terrible.
Of Guinnesses on Christmas Day, honestly.
Shocking.
Do you know what I always say to you whenever I see you, Cammy, is I so respect how fearless you are. Is there anything that you are not willing to turn your hand to?
Well, I won't do Strictly again. I did that for Sport Relief. But last year's Strictly, Kelvin Fletcher, who's a pal of mine from Emmerdale, was better than the pros. And I thought, no way. Now, there's no way they want me going on like Ed Balls did for a giggle and a laugh. You know, this has now become more or less a professional tournament. So I won't do that. I keep getting asked to do the jungle, which I'm quite happy to do, but not while I'm working for Sky, because obviously I can't get the time off. I could ask them for time off, but I really don't want to be doing that while football's going on. Not like Harry did, Harry Redknapp, in the jungle. So basically, if they still want me after Sky get rid of me, I will do that one.
I'm just going to let that one seep across the airwaves for us all to digest that, because I don't think any of us could contemplate watching Sky Sports football coverage without having you on there. It does beg the question, though, with everything else that's come your way, this incredible sort of ubiquitous hold you seem to have on so many different aspects of television and the media. Do you find it harder and harder to keep your hand in on the football side of things? Do you have to discipline yourself to keep up to date and stuff?
No. The good thing about that is when I'm at home, we have separate rooms, me and Anne. One where I go in and watch the football constantly, you know, which has been, that's the brilliant thing since lockdown. There's a game on every single night. And the compromise is, Clem, when we go to bed, we watch Coronation Street together. Who said romance is dead?
You are painting quite a picture here. I have to tell you, the most extreme version of this I've heard is Robbie Martinez tells the story that him and Beth at home have got L-shaped sofas and they've got two tellies in the same room. And so on one wall there's his telly and he's got sort of radio headphones and he can watch the football, and Beth's watching the other telly on the other wall. But they can sit side by side and hold hands, have a little bit of communication, but they're watching completely different programs. Tell me about this music. Now, I know you love your music and I know you love singing, because we were on a charity hike up Kilimanjaro, and one of the greatest memories of my life is when we come back down, we ended up going in the gift shop in the national park we were in, buying about six bottles of Tusker beer each, and then you serenading us all the way back to the hotel. Except with the altitude sickness and stuff, the beer went straight through us. We had to stop the bus about three times at the side of the road for a week.
What a great memory.
They were, but all with you serenading us with Mac the Knife. I mean, how did the Christmas albums come about? Second year in a row.
Yeah, well, the first one came about, I did a programme called All Together Now on the BBC with Jerry Halliwell and Rob Beckett. And there's 100 like cabaret artists, comedians and stuff like that in the audience. And however many people stand up, that's the amount of votes that you get. So Simon Dent, my agent, rang me and said, do you want to do it? And I said, yeah, I've seen the programme, love it. So yeah, he said, what do you want to sing? So I said, Brown Eyed Girl. My go-to song, after 30 seconds, all the 100 can join in. They'll join in with the la-la-las and it'll go down a storm. He said, oh, they've come back to me and said they've got too many people singing sing-along songs. Would you sing a ballad? And I went, no, not a chance. You know, they'll just sit on their backsides and no one will stand up. It's not like you. You normally go into these things for a bit of fun. So I looked at him and I went, yeah, you're right. You know, why should a singing show be any different? So I said, okay, if it's a ballad, it's got to be Elton John's Your Song or nothing. So he went to them, they agreed to Your Song. I sang Your Song, and Adam Greenup from Silver Screen Records is watching that show and thought my voice would be perfect to sing with a 22-piece big band in a swing style and bring out a Christmas album.
So, you know, album number one, a great success. Out comes album number two, and it's filled with, well, first tracks, I Wish It Could Be Christmas Every Day, I Believe in Father Christmas, actually, In the Bleak Midwinter makes it onto this one, various other tracks. Of course, our stingy producer, Dave, has worked out the only way we can use certain tracks on this podcast for overseas rights and all that is he's had to pick the ones he says are out of copyright or something or other. So I tell you what, let's have a blast. We're going to let's play a little bit of White Christmas if we can. Let's have a little bit of a listen. Here we go.
I'm dreaming of a white Christmas, just like the ones I used to know, where the treetops glisten and children listen to hear sleigh bells in the snow.
Is it, do you know, when you're now doing it, does it feel a little bit like you are singing in the shower and things? I mean, is it just most natural? No, seriously, did you have to try extra hard, or does that just come naturally to you?
No, it's been difficult. That's the one thing I have to say is, you know, I thought I could sing before, and I think everybody else is the same. You know, you think you can sing, you sing along on the karaoke or in a bar or whatever you do, and you think you sound absolutely fantastic until you meet a singing coach who educates you and tells you, you know, staccato and legato. I thought they were two Italian footballers. So, honestly, it's a world away from how I was singing before, even on Altogether Now. The way that I'm singing these days, holding the notes, being more powerful, being more softer, being more cooler, you know, making it sound comfortable. So, no, definitely not singing in the shower. That's one thing for sure.
Well, you just seem to adapt to all these different circumstances so seamlessly. And actually, I wondered whether the story of how the album came about with the record company exec, the producer watching you on the television program, has actually just been a story of your life. I mean, do you ever think about how your life would have turned out if you hadn't missed that sending off that was kind of such a pivotal moment in the way you've sort of seeped into public consciousness?
Oh, very much so, Clem. As you just said, fate. My dad made me join the Royal Navy instead of being an apprentice at Middlesbrough. Navy football team are training at the Tor Point in Devon near Plymouth, and I managed to get into Portsmouth Football Club. My dad gets a letter from the Navy, and then I have a 22-year football career. Sheffield United get relegated from the Premier League on the last day of the season, away at Chelsea. I had another year in my contract unless we got relegated. Then I was a free agent. So Lenny Lawrence, who'd signed me for Middlesbrough, was the manager of Bradford. I end up going to Bradford with Lenny. Lenny gets the sack, I get the job, take over from Lenny. The management job, it goes well. In my first season, we win 11 out of 16 games, get to the playoffs, win the playoff final. And then I go to Stoke thinking, right, I'm going to change everything around at Stoke and they're going to be fine from the position they're in. But I took over a club that was struggling completely. They'd lost 7-0 two weeks before I took over against Birmingham City. I couldn't play my best player on the day of my first game, Andy Griffin, even though I was the one who was helping sell him to Newcastle or Leicester. Martin O'Neill or Kenny Dalglish. Kenny Dalglish got him in the end. And I made mistakes, Clem. I'm not excusing myself out of any of this. I did make mistakes along the way, but it was one of them jobs where I just got there at the wrong time and it slid downhill. So then I get the sack. And because I'd been working with Sky, I seamlessly fell into Sky. And then they created Kamara Cam, me going out to the football matches. And all of a sudden, like you say, another career's come on. And I am now a pundit and a presenter for Sky Football. And then in 2010, I missed the red card and handle it in a way that I thought was going to get me into trouble, because I rang the producer to apologise. And as you say, that went viral. Over 20 million people around the world have seen it. And that brought me into mainstream television. So mainstream television has brought me into singing. So, yeah, it's all fate. And I, you know, I'm so lucky.
I'll tell you what, it's a great story, just to remind anybody who's out there after a tough year for most people, that life can change in an instant, and sometimes in the most unlikely of ways. While I've got you, Chris, if you don't mind, I want to run through a couple of the sort of key stories from particularly the EFL Sky Bet Championship this week. And obviously the one story that has dominated things has been events over the last couple of games at the Den. Millwall fans applauded as their team and QPR players came together to hold an anti-racism banner up before Tuesday's championship match, days after, obviously, Millwall fans, a section of Millwall fans, I should say, booed them for taking the knee. The Millwall players didn't actually take the knee before the midweek game, but QPR players did, despite stopping the gesture early in the season. Millwall said it was one of the most important days in the club's history and handed letters to those fans in attendance saying, "The eyes of the world are on this football club tonight, your club." I mean, appalling events on Saturday. We have to applaud Millwall for their stance since, don't we? And QPR, actually, again, for reversing their stance, which is their director of football, Les Ferdinand, felt that the gesture didn't quite have significant enough symbolism and was being detracted by doing it every time. Lots of questions in there, I know. What are your thoughts on the whole situation?
I think we have to remember the reason why players started taking the knee. And the reason why players started taking the knee, because George Floyd lost his life because of the colour of his skin. That's the reason why. That was the whole beginning. The Black Lives Matter movement was secondary initially when that happened, right? The Black Lives Matter movement adopted George Floyd as their sort of, I don't know what word I can use, but they were behind that in a massive, massive way, which was understandable because he lost his life because of the colour of his skin. So players started taking the knee with not just black players, but players from everywhere, you know, white players, players from this country, in solidarity against racism. And that was the reason they did it. We're all one. As far as I'm concerned, we're all people. We're all human beings. Colour doesn't come into it. When you're talking about anybody, you mention who they are. You don't first of all say, "Oh, that Asian bloke," or "that Chinese bloke," or "that bloke there." We're all, in my eyes, we're all the same. I went through the most horrific racism that anybody could ever imagine. I realised that. I was, in the 70s and early 80s, probably the only black person in the stadiums. The only black person, you know. So I am, you know, black people didn't go to watch football and there was hardly any black players around. So you can imagine how difficult that was. Even your own teammates were racist. The supporters were racist. You know, when I started off, Portsmouth had a small element of National Front supporters who used to boo me onto the pitch before I'd even kicked the ball. You know, that for me, it was the norm, you know. So I never even thought about that. You know, it didn't upset me when I'd go into Portsmouth dressing room the following day after Alf Garnett or Love Thy Neighbour had been on. You just thought, you cannot make a fuss at this moment in time because of the fact you're in the minority of one, and if you show that that's hurt, then you will lose that position as that minority of one and won't be seen again. So you had to go along. So it's slightly different for me, Clem, when I look at a situation, it has now got to be down to the individual person themselves, in my opinion, of course, whether they decide to not go out and play football because they feel that, you know, there is racist people within that stadium. It really has to be down to the individuals and the solidarity. What we saw in the Paris Saint-Germain game, the solidarity of the other players. So if they're all in it together, then this is a massive mega message that football is sending out, which, you know, I have to applaud. But like I said, it was different from when I was playing.
I'm really sorry you had to go through those experiences, Chris. We should praise as an individual as well Millwall's defender Marlon Romeo, who, lest we forget, whose dad is one of the pioneers of black dance music, Jazzy B, from Soul to Soul, and his whole handling of the situation, talking about feeling personally respected and offended by what happened, and Millwall letting him lead the team out, and then he was eventually applauded off the field after the match against QPR as he held aloft the shirt with the logo of, obviously, the anti-discrimination body, Kick It Out. I mean, he has handled himself absolutely magnificently, in my opinion. Thanks for tackling that for us, Chris. I would just like to take you on to the football. I know you watched a lot of Championship football this time around, with there only being 1 3 o'clock kickoff in the Premier League on a Saturday for Soccer Saturday. Are we any clearer? Have we got any clearer picture as to who's going to be going back up again? I guess we'll focus around the relegated clubs first and foremost, do we?
Well, the relegated clubs are in the top three as we speak, Clem. You know, 1, 2 and 3. How many times have we ever seen that before? I can't remember it. It's unprecedented. Normally one of them is down at the bottom of the table and struggling to come to terms with playing in the Championship. So this could be a unique year. The only thing you would say is you go down to probably less than halfway and there's only 4 or 6 points in it. So, you know, it could change. I just think, looking at the table as I was this morning, that I found that very interesting that those three clubs came down from the Premier League, were at the top.
Yeah, Watford at Birmingham this coming weekend. Norwich are at Blackburn. Bournemouth entertain Huddersfield. We've got Derby picked up that vital win last weekend at home to Stoke. South Yorkshire Derby, Sheffield Wednesday against Barnsley, Wickham against Coventry down the bottom. But I want to pick out early kickoff is Cardiff against Swansea. Neil Harris seems to have turned his situation around. You know, just 10 days ago, as I said on the intro to this week's official EFL podcast, he seemed to be struggling to maintain his position. It just goes to show, Chris, doesn't it? 4 consecutive wins and all of a sudden the world is a very, very different place.
Yeah, well, it is a different place anyway, Clem. That's the thing that I would say. Having been watching Championship matches, the last two games that I've seen were involving Huddersfield at home at the John Smith Stadium. And both of those games, in the first 45 minutes, football and chances-wise, it's been excellent.
Supporters starting to trickle back. Fingers crossed they increase in number, volume, and we get things closer and closer to what we regard as normality. League One, loads of big clubs near the top of the table this coming weekend. Hull, the leaders, at home to Shrewsbury. We've got third against fourth as Ipswich play Portsmouth. It's Lincoln against Sunderland. I'll mention them in a minute. Peterborough have lost 4 of their last 5 at home to Rochdale. Accrington, Stanley, John Coleman's team. We heard from him earlier, away at Wigan. And Charlton against Wimbledon. In the seat you're in at this time last week was Lee Johnson. Now, either he knew something he wasn't telling us, or he drove the quickest it's possible to imagine from his home in Bristol up to Sunderland. What about that as an appointment? Were you surprised that they went for Lee Johnson?
I was thinking, once Parkey lost his job, that Paul Cook would get the job. So I was surprised, but not in Lee Johnson's record, his enthusiasm, his organisation skills. I think he'll go in there and do well. I mean, what a great job, Sunderland. You know, somebody's got to get it right soon. It's, you know, when I looked at Chris Coleman taking over at Sunderland, I saw similarities with my time at Stoke City. And I thought, you know, he's gone in there. I've spoken to him before he got the job. And we talked about, you know, what he was going to do when he'd get in there, what a great club it is, and reverse the slide immediately and do this and that and the other. And, of course, when it's on that slippery slope, you know, horses won't hold it back because it's heading down and there's nothing you can do about it. So it is a great club. Someone's going to get it right very, very soon. Why not Lee Johnson?
And in League Two, it's Carlisle, who are just outside the automatic places, against Stevenage. Exeter at home to Tranmere. It's third v seventh as Forest Green play Cambridge United. I can't help but think of Justin Edinburgh when I see Leighton Orient are entertaining the leaders. Newport, Colchester at Port Vale, Cheltenham doing brilliantly at Salford. And your former team as a player and manager, Bradford City, are away at Oldham. Three wins all season, lost the last four, Chris. It's
so hard.
It's
so
a distressing
hard. Stuart
situation.
McCall, three times the manager now, Stuart McCall. I think that's probably, he's in a unique set of people who've done that three times at the same club. Can he get it right third time around? I'm sure he'll be hoping for that. But it just goes to show how much that club loves Stuart McCall and desperate for him to get it right.
Chris, it's been an absolute pleasure. We really appreciate you joining us. We've had moments of sheer hilarity. I've had moments for me of great sadness as well. But, I mean, just thanks for being you. Keep being yourself, mate. Keep entertaining us. And I sincerely hope when you said, when you leave Sky, you don't know something that we know, because the football world would not be the same without you. To finish, the only thing that will always carry on is our producer Dave will always be a little tight-wadded, shall we say. So let's see if he's got any budget left, because I would like to fade you out with your beautiful version of O Come All Ye Faithful.
Play it, I'll sort it.
O come all ye faithful, joyful and triumphant. Come ye, oh come ye to Bethlehem. Come and behold him, born the King of angels. Oh come, let us adore him. Oh come, let us adore him. Oh come, let us adore him. Christ the Lord.
Shall we leave him to it? I think we should. That's it for another week. A big thank you to Chris Kamara and to John Coleman, one of whom, it might have escaped your attention, has a Christmas album out. If you've enjoyed this week's episode, then please do give us a 5-star rating, press the subscribe button, and please share on all your socials. If you want to get in touch, our email address is podcast@efl.com. That's podcast@efl.com. My name's Mark Clement. Thanks very much for listening. We'll see you next week for another episode of
The Official EFL Podcast.